Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Football Social Daily. With German Doner Kebab. Extra meat. Extra protein. Try the GDK Gym Box.
Hello, this is Football Social Daily. I'm Jim. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast because it is the only daily Premier League podcast you can find. Click subscribe. We'll let you know when the next episode is available. Today in the studio, we've got Marley Anderson over there.
Hello.
I've got Lee Whitehouse over there.
Hello.
And we're talking Champions League and Manchester City's win over Real Madrid. Was it a Pep Guardiola managerial masterclass? Or was it just a bit of good fortune? We'll discuss that shortly. It's also Europa League football tonight with Wolves, Manchester United and Arsenal all in action. We'll look ahead to those games and decide who, if any of those teams, is in the best shape to lift the trophy. Plus, after Manchester United announced accounting losses yesterday, Liverpool have told everyone that they are in the money. Are they a club that is doing it right when it comes to keeping those finances in the black? And as Lee is our financial expert, I'm sure I'll have some insight on that one as well. We're going to kick off with a couple of reviews, though, because we've had some crackers in. If you leave us a review, however you listen to podcasts, you'll probably get a shout-out on the show. So go and leave us a five-star review, just like this dude, Father Biff. This is brilliant. So Father Biff is a priest in rural America. He's a genuine bona fide priest. And he listens to us whilst he drives around rural America visiting people and kind of doing his little visits. And he says, the podcast totally cheers me up in between some rough moments, like listening to my mates in the pub. Father Biff, you are very welcome. I absolutely love the thought of Father Biff driving Father around. Biff. I see him in a pickup truck going through like fields of corn and stuff like that with a little wind mill or something in the background. We are with you, Father Biff.
I tell you what, I didn't, like when we started this podcast, I did not expect a priest.
No,
that's amazing. I love it.
It's incredible. It's my favourite review ever. Also got one that's not five stars from Shaker Ali, who's given us 4 out of 5.
Oh.
He says, I enjoy and appreciate the daily Premier League updates. Thank you, Shaker Ali. I do not enjoy or appreciate your unpopular opinions about pancakes. This is because it was Shrove Tuesday in the UK. On Tuesday, and
shockingly, yeah.
I was saying I don't like pancakes, essentially, and this particular reviewer has taken offence to that. He says, you can't trash talk pancakes and expect to get away with it. 4 out of 5. I think we need to explain that pancakes in the UK are slightly different to pancakes in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
They're way better in America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're not talking about your weird American pancakes. We're talking about our horrible, greasy, UK-based pancakes. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you don't like controversial opinions on foodstuffs, well, you can take your podcasting ears elsewhere, because that's exactly what you get on this podcast. Right, should we crack on with a little bit of football talk? And let's start with Real Madrid versus Manchester City. Last night, Manchester City's team selection for their game against Real Madrid caused some eyebrows to be raised, but they came out 2-1 winners in the end. So was it a case of in Pep we trust, or was it a case of just a little bit of luck at the end of the day with a 2-1 win at the Bernabeu? What do you reckon, Marley? What did you reckon when you saw that team lineup from Guardiola?
It was a bit of a strange one. I was very surprised Aguero didn't start.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised Fernandinho didn't start. But apparently Fernandinho wasn't quite 100%. And he obviously judged that 100% fit Otamendi was better than Fernandinho, which is a brave call,
wow,
obviously.
That is a brave call.
But it was one of them where I was in a pub watching it and there was a few City fans around me. Obviously, I'm a Newcastle fan, so I'm kind of coming at this as a neutral. And they're all like, what's he doing that? Why is Aguero on the bench and all this stuff? And it's kind of like, you know, 90 minutes later, his decision was proved that, you know, he won the game. Mm. And it's almost like he knows more about football than big guys
weird,
in the pub, isn't it?
That's a surprise.
It's almost like that's why he gets paid like £5 million a season
City
or whatever it is.
Fans do have just some justification in that kind of what is he doing? Because there have been occasions under Pep Guardiola where maybe he knows what he's doing and he makes some brave team choices, but I'm not sure the players necessarily completely 100% get what he has sent them out on the pitch to do. It's like, he is a very clever man. It's common theory that he sometimes overthinks these big games, but whether he can communicate what's in his head with his players on the pitch is sometimes another case.
I read a lot about this overthinking thing yesterday, and it's just, I don't think it's overthinking. I just think it's, like, if Guardiola came out and explained his tactics to, you know, 25 overweight middle-aged journalists in the press conference, and they printed it, all of a sudden, everyone would know that that tactic is in the bank.
No one would understand it still.
Yeah, so like last night, like Jesus played wide on the sort of right or left of the front three, and everyone was like, "I don't really know why he's out there." But then Pep said after the game, or I seen it reported that he said that Real Madrid are amazing with the ball at defending without the ball in a central zone. But when they don't have the ball, they're vulnerable out wide. So like Jesus's movement is amazing. Like he's so hard to mark. But if you put him against Ramos and Varane, they've probably got him. Yeah. If you put him against the left back Mendy or the right back Carvajal, he's probably going to get some joy out of
them. Well, it was essentially the false
nine.
And
he had a few chances.
We've seen
as well.
Him play the false nine before. He did it against, was it Manchester United in?
In the Carabao Cup. Yeah, when they won 3-1.
And it kind of worked there, and it confuses defenders. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to mark. Yeah. They don't know whether to press up. And that movement from midfield really, well, it gave Manchester City the advantage last night.
Jesus
was also playing at fullback at one point because Carabao was literally pushing him back as they were attacking that much. But he knew that he must know he's got that in his locker, which none of us would have ever dreamed of thinking of doing. And to be paid off, and that's what these big managers need. He knew he had to find a way of beating that Real Madrid team, which is arguably in better shape than what Man City is at the moment. And he had to find a way of doing it. Now, you know, if you look back to last week, and we're all surprised about Liverpool losing at Atletico. Well, you know, that's something that Klopp didn't do. Klopp didn't find another way of getting through what, you know, if they were losing quite early and they didn't find another way.
Well, that was Atletico finding a way to beat Liverpool,
wasn't
it?
Real's, you know, he knew what Real's strengths were, so he knows where the weaknesses are, and he's found a way around his squad. Because if it had started Aguero, he wouldn't have been tracking Carvajal back.
He probably doesn't have the energy to go all the way back. Jesus did. I mean, that was one of the things, like, Gabriel, I'm going to play you out wide, but if he goes, you got to go with him.
You got to go, yeah.
And fair enough, he did it. Like, his tactics were spot on.
Yeah, bang on.
It does City kind of only show. Conceded as well because they made a mistake in midfield.
It does kind of show why it takes Guardiola sometimes a little bit of time to have that impact, because the players he needs in that team are so specific. They have to be so flexible. I think Bernardo was like leading the line last night. And it was just, I think, don't think there's anyone in this room that could say it was luck. It was a brilliant tactical performance from Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You don't get lucky and beat one of the best teams in the world. No. Like, just look at the way they did it. Like, it was tactical. It was brilliant. It's tactically brilliant.
As you said, Jesus had a brilliant game last night. Kind of shrug off his recent performances where he maybe hasn't been at the level that was expected. The other player that shone was probably Kevin De Bruyne. Scored his 50th goal for Manchester City. I can't think, I was trying to work this out earlier, of another player, probably in world football, but certainly in the Premier League, that I would rather have in my team right now than Kevin De Bruyne. He scored his 50th goal, but his game isn't all about goals. It's those little inch-perfect passes that set up the players around him. He's just an incredible, phenomenal player right now.
I was watching the programme the other day, and they were saying about how great this Liverpool team is at the moment. He's going to be one of the best. He's probably one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world at the moment, one of the best in Premier League history. But there's still, De Bruyne would still get into that team. But De Bruyne would still make that team
into
better.
That midfield.
Yeah, because like,
if you replace Wijnaldum with De Bruyne, how good would that team be?
Oh, they'd be even better.
Unbelievable.
It's just, he's that good a player.
Like, Wijnaldum's great as well, like, but if you, De Bruyne,
De Bruyne,
for me, he's outside of Messi and Ronaldo, he's the best in the world for me. easy. Like, it's not even that close.
But because of his age, you'd probably take him over Messi or Ronaldo, wouldn't you?
If Newcastle, if you were going to,
you're going to buy him.
You're going to get 5 or 6 years out of him. You're probably going to get another 2 or 3 from Messi and Ronaldo. So.
And the big thing for Manchester City is they finally found someone who can take a penalty. They've missed four in a row. And scored last night. I mean, you kind of wonder why Kevin De Bruyne hasn't been taking the previous four penalties, maybe. But the pressure he would have been under at that point. Four penalties missed in a row, away at Real Madrid in the Champions League, and he was
scores
cool as anything.
And everything, yeah.
Was he captain last night as well, De Bruyne? He's got an armband on.
I think so. Yeah, because Fernandinho really, was on the bench, really, and Aguero wasn't on.
He's just a class actor, that boy. Yeah, he's absolutely. What he can do, I mean, some of the passes he could put on his, when he's on his pump, and he's really, you know, he's really on his game. The balls he can deliver into that box, inch perfect every single time, just absolutely amazing. And he can, to be honest, he can score from anywhere outside the box as well.
Yeah.
Slightly less positive for John Stones last night. He wasn't in the squad selected for the Champions League. Otamendi started. I mean, when you're losing out your place to Otamendi in the heart of defence, you've really got a question. Yeah. I mean, he's had a poor season, John Stones, and you begin to question where he goes from here, whether he can get back in the team, whether he can back in the squad. I mean, Laporte got injured last night, so Manchester City will certainly have to call on him between now and the end of the season. But he doesn't seem like he necessarily has a future under Pep Guardiola at Manchester City.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation for him, really, because there's a good player in there. Like, I don't think anyone can really doubt that. I think there is a top defender in there, but he needs, for me, he needs a run of games. And you can't, it's at the point of a season where you can't really have that. You can't give someone 7 or 8 games to get the form better, because in those 7 or 8 games, you've got to win them. You know, you can't afford mistakes, especially in like the Champions League, for example. You know, we're never going to throw him in last night against. No. He's probably, you know, Laporte, Otamendi, and then Fernandinho, and then Stones, and that's why he didn't even get in the squad. So,
I think he's got to look at a move, hasn't he? Arsenal were linked in the transfer window quite heavily towards the end of that window.
Defender can't defend. Arsenal signing.
I think he'd be, you know, he's, but at least he can go and he'll have game time at Arsenal, because let's be honest, he's better than what they've got.
Yeah,
as bad as he is. I think he comes across like he's bad because he's in one of the top teams in the league.
When he was
at Everton, he's still, I mean, I think the problem is he doesn't appear to have grown since Everton. So what he was doing at Everton, he was making mistakes there, and he's still making mistakes now. So he doesn't seem to have grown under the guidance where everybody goes to City and appears to get better. He doesn't seem to have done that. So, you know, he needs to go somewhere that he's not going to be so in the spotlight. He still will be in the spotlight somewhere like Arsenal, but they do play his way. And if he does make a mistake, like, oh, Arsenal defenders made a mistake, what a surprise. It's not a huge issue, is it?
He's 25 now as well, so he's not the young player who should be developing. Yeah, he's reaching 25. That stage in his career where he should be.
He's still got six or seven years.
He's still young for a centre-half, though, isn't he?
You can still improve. You can still do it.
Still grow as a player.
I'm not sure where his future lies. I think even Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal have got the defence a lot better now, and they've got Saliba coming in the summer as well, back from Saint Etienne. So you're looking at them as a potential destination for him, and that looks like that door's closed. So you're looking at somewhere else. You'd assume he would try and stay in a top six team. Mm. You know, Spurs are sort of well stocked, aren't they?
Decent,
a little bit.
Yeah.
Arsenal, Chelsea have got plenty of centre backs.
United.
Man United.
Well, there's an opportunity there.
And obviously, he doesn't get anywhere near Liverpool. So then you're looking at maybe a return to Everton or something. I don't know.
From an England point of view, do you think Gareth Southgate will be questioning his involvement in the Euros now? Because as you say, he needs a run, and he's not going to get that run at Manchester City. So if he does go to the Euros, and if he goes as a first choice
centre-back
alongside Maguire.
It'd be Gomez and Maguire, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You would assume. Then it's a free-for-all because...
Southgate's also kind of made this... It's almost a rod for himself, really, because he's made this point of playing players who are in form and playing for their clubs.
No, he says he will play players who are in form and play for their clubs, but he never actually does that.
Well, but he'll go against everything he stands for, really, Southgate, if he does take him and play him as a starter. I wouldn't start him. Not in his current form.
No. Same.
Yeah, I think, like, say, Gomez at the minute, he's proven himself.
He seems to like Tyrone Mings as well.
Which is
I mean, no one's conceded more
goals.
No one's
conceded more goals than
exactly.
this year.
No one's conceded. Villa have conceded 52 goals, I think, this season.
Yeah,
so,
crazy, man.
You know, if you took going on form, I think Mings has had a good season in terms of, like, he's proved he's probably the best of their defenders. Mm. However, if you're still in a team yeah. that's conceding all them goals and then you're going to stick him in the England team,
good preparation, isn't it?
A lot of work he's been doing, Mings.
Back to Manchester City. They're obviously in control of this tie now. You'd probably fancy them, although, I mean, it is Real Madrid, but you still fancy them to win the home leg. Mm. Real Madrid missing Ramos now after that red card at the end of the game. Ramos' 26th red card of Real Madrid wow. career, which is insanity.
Wow.
Can they go all the way, Manchester City? Where are they on the kind of list of favourites for the Champions League now?
I think they're right up there,
yeah.
to be honest. Like, I know they're nowhere near what they were last season in terms of, like, the league form and stuff. But over a two-leg game, would you back against them, any team? I'm not sure.
Liverpool, I think, would be the only team to give them the biggest ones.
I really fancy Bayern this year, though. I think they look so strong. They've just come into this season. They started poorly, but they've been so strong in the last few weeks.
There's been some surprises, wasn't there? Barca drew against Napoli, which actually that's not a surprise, because Napoli are very good at home. You still expect Barca to get through, but they're clearly not the team they were a couple of years ago. Juventus didn't win last night either. They lost at Lyon.
That's
a bit of a crazy result.
Didn't expect that.
No one saw that one coming. So it's quite an open one, other than, I mean, especially with Liverpool losing Atletico as well. I mean, that's not a foregone conclusion they're going through.
Yep.
So it is pretty open. So, yet City have got to be up there as well. I mean, plus, look at the players they've got. I mean, those players, they're some of the best players in Europe in that team. On their day, as Molly said, over two legs, you'd really fancy them to turn up.
I don't think there's, if you look around at sort of what other teams are doing as well, like Bayern, obviously are practically through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
They've got a tight league, a title race with Leipzig are up there and Dortmund are up there as well. So they're fighting on two things a week.
Mm.
Man City are marooned in second. Like they're not gonna win the title. They're not going to be distracted by anything else. After this weekend, they're probably going to have won the cup. So that's out the way. That's done. Liverpool, I know they've got nothing to play for. However, they're still top of the league and trying to remain unbeaten. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of a potential distraction. Barcelona are in a title race. Real Madrid are in a title race. So that sort of hinders them slightly. Napoli are trying to... I think Napoli are about 10th in Serie A, something like that.
They're trying to get up there, aren't they?
Yeah, their main priority is get back into the Champions League next year, not win this one. Like, they're not as bothered. So if you're looking around at potential winners of who's got the least on their plate, Man City have the best chance of winning it, and also the added chip on the shoulder that FUEFA, because we want to win it and really stick it up the guys that are trying to ban it.
What drama would it add as well?
That will have an impact. Pep would love it, wouldn't he, just to stick it to him? And I think the players would.
Do you know what? I'd love it. I'm not a Man City fan, but I would love them to be just to... It'd just be so entertaining to see them lift it. And the UEFA, you know... The guys in the suits, like, giving them the medals, like, sorry about this. This is awkward, isn't it?
It's one of those for UEFA. Like, if City did win it and the holders of the trophy can't be in it next year,
yeah.
I mean, it kind of undermines the trophy for next year.
Well,
it'd be like the holders aren't
to have a Champions League with potentially not the champions of the Premier League in that competition, it undermines the whole thing. It's why the whole situation is a little bit untenable.
They could claim to be the lineal Champions League champions, like Tyson Fury claims to be the lineal heavyweight champion of the world, because he got his titles taken off him, he never got beaten for them, and he's got a point in that as well. So yeah, Man City, the lineal Champions League champions until 2022 when they're allowed back in it.
It'd be an amazing twist to that story. Well, we're going to come back in a minute and talk about Europe's other competition, Europa League action for three Premier League tonights, and we're going to talk about Liverpool, who have got loads of money. We'll do that next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily with German Doner Kebab. Find your nearest GDK restaurants at germandonerkebab.com. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. I'm Jim. I did a sort of loads of money reference before the little break there, which I think Lee would have got, but I bet Marley didn't.
I think I do.
Do you? Okay.
I think I do. As in, I've heard it before.
Because Marley's slightly younger than me and Lee.
So
yeah, definitely.
That's not hard.
It's like a reference from a 90s TV show with Harry Enfield.
Yeah.
If you've got some spare time on the internet today, give it a Google. Yeah, it was terrible. It was good in the 90s, but it doesn't stand the test of time in any way. Right, let's talk about Liverpool. Yesterday, we're talking about Manchester United's losses. Today, we're talking about Liverpool having loads of cash. They've said in a statement, and they've released their accounts, they have sustained growth across all areas of the club. They've announced pre-tax profits of £42 million, increased turnover from last season as well. Now, this runs till May of last year, so it doesn't take into account this last season's Champions League win or what will probably be a Premier League victory at the end of this season as well, obviously. But they are essentially in rude financial health. Are they doing it right? And does it matter for a club? I think we talked about this yesterday in the podcast. As a fan, do you really care what your team's bank balance says?
No. No, I don't really think you do. You care about what's happening on the pitch, don't you? And I suppose the only time, coming from a supporter of a club who apparently have no money, it does impact on what you can and can't do in the transfer window. But as long as your team's playing, I mean, you ask any West Brom fan at the moment, do they care that the club are saying they've got no money when we're 10 points clear of third? No, nobody.
Yeah, because the money's going to come.
The money will come next season. Yeah. It's like, it's not, you know, I don't think it really matters as long as your team are playing well.
It's like waiting for a tax rebate almost, isn't it? It's like, yeah, I've got no money now, but I've got £200 coming off the tax money in a couple of days.
It's a nice thing to have, though, isn't it? And it becomes one of those things that a fan uses to talk about their club in a positive term, whether they've got a decent bank balance.
But you know, Liverpool clutching fans at straws when they start doing
that. Liverpool fans love talking about their net spend, don't they? And how Manchester said their net spend's better than Manchester City and all that kind of thing. Yeah. But I guess it comes down to, at the end of the day, it's what you do with it, almost, not how much you've got.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. The original question around, are they doing it right? I think they're doing it right in the sense that they're selling players when the players are getting a bit twitchy about it. So you think of Coutinho, he went when Barca came calling.
Yep.
And it's what they did with that money afterwards. And then in terms of their signings, they pinpointed the signings early and they waited and got the man that they wanted. So when he went and got Van Dijk, he had to go and wait for Van Dijk, but he got him. Mm. And arguably Van Dijk has transformed, he's transformed the defence. And then you look at the keeper, he pointed the keeper out very early and they went and got him very early. That's how to do business, not do what Man United are doing and just kind of scatting around for anybody who's available, like an Igalo, just because you haven't planned your transfer window properly.
I think for me, it's what happens below the signings, though, because I think any club can go and spend £50-60 million on a player, and every club does go and spend £50-60 million on a player. Now, it's Liverpool's investment in the infrastructure of the club below that, because they are investing in the stadium, they are investing in the training ground, they're investing in the youth development, and it's that kind of thing that secures the future of a club beyond signing a Virgil van Dijk or a Sanchez or wherever it might be.
West Ham haven't done that, have they? That's no, where you're coming from, Jim.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Completely.
I
can see where he was going with it. Yeah,
you left Jared Bowen out of that, that thing very nicely. Well done.
Right, we're going to move on to the Europa League and the preview there. Three matches for Premier League clubs tonight in the Europa League. There's Wolves, Arsenal and Manchester United, all in Thursday night Europe action. Out of those three clubs, if any, who do you think has the best chance of winning this competition?
For me, Man United.
Out of Arsenal, Wolves?
Yeah. Don't ask me why. I don't know why.
Not going to back it up with any information. Picking a name out of thin air.
I don't know, to be honest. I think out of everyone, I like Inter in the entire competition. Obviously, I think Inter are going to be really, really, really strong.
Mm.
There's some weird results that knocking around. I expected Ajax to go through, but they got beat 2-0 by Getafe. If you don't know anything about Getafe, they're basically a Spanish Burnley. They just hammer it. They hammer it towards a big man and that's pretty much it. Also, Salzburg went out. Well, not went out, but they're 4-1 down going into tonight's game. So you're looking at them, the kind of people that can win it. I genuinely think it'll be a very good chance of an English team at least getting to the final. Like, obviously, it depends on how the draw goes. But I'd love to see Man United Inter Milan in the final. That'd be amazing.
Sanchez and Lukaku playing
against Man United, it'd be brilliant.
I mean, Manchester United do have the heritage in the competition, I guess. Would you back them as going all the way, Lee?
Yeah, I think so. They've clearly got something, but it also depends on what his focus is. He's now got them back into a top four race.
Yeah.
And so where does his focus go? Because he can guarantee himself a Champions League place by finishing fourth/fifth because of what's going on with Man City. So he's got himself in, to be fair to Solskjaer, on what feels like it's been an absolute disaster season for him. They're still in the Europa. they went quite far. Well, they went far in the Carabao, and now they're back in that hunt for the top four. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like calling it a top four. I know it is a top four race, but it feels wrong this season. Yeah. It's like it's not a 100-meter sprint, is it? It's more like an egg and spoon race this season if it's going to be a race.
Three-legged race.
Do you know what, though? I think in terms of the English clubs, I've got to say, I mean, Arsenal have obviously got the strikers, and they're starting to defend well, as we mentioned a bit earlier. So, you know, if they're not conceding three goals, you've got every chance of the boys up front can do some damage. But on their day, what those... The boys down at Molineux can do. I hate to say it, but I'm against Espanyol. That what a performance that was to go and put four past them. Yeah.
But Espanyol are bottom in Spain. They're bottom
of
the table.
You've got to beat what's in front of you, isn't they? Put four past them.
Well,
the
Europa form was all right until that point.
It was, yeah. But like, you've got to qualify it. Like Espanyol are. it kind of is what it is, but yeah, like Lee said, you know,
they've got players in that squad who are good enough to be in any team in if you go for the norm top six as you go, they've got players in that squad who could easily get into the into those teams, and I think they on their day, if they can produce if they play to their ability, they can surprise anybody in that competition. If the draw goes well for them, you wouldn't be surprised to see them potentially semis into the in game through the final. Because and plus Nuno, he seems to come up with it on the big occasion. Mm. So wouldn't be surprised.
Let's go through these games because there are three to go through. We're not going to spend too long on any of them. But Espanyol Wolves is the first one. 4-0 first leg victory. It would be anything but a disaster. For Wolves not to go through that one. I think the interesting question is how Nuno Sanchez approaches this one. Because he said the 4-0 victory means nothing in the first leg, which is absolute rubbish.
That's rubbish, yeah.
Are we going to see him rest players, or do you think he'll go for it as he did in the first leg?
I think he'll rest them.
He should do.
I mean, they're not...
They've got Spurs on Sunday as well, so...
They're not a million miles away from that top five place as well. So they'll want to keep themselves interested in that. And I think the chairman will... To be fair, the owner, as he is, he promised them Champions League football in 5 years. That was his promise to the fans. So I think it depends where Nuno sees the best fit. But I think he can afford to rest players in this, and then focus on the game on Sunday, and then look for the next round.
Here's a little stat for Wolves fans: 221 times a team has lost by four or more goals in the first leg of the Europa League. Only twice have those teams gone on to progress to the next round, which is a pretty weighted stat in Wolves' favour, you think. So we'll move on from that. We'll talk about Arsenal versus Olympiacos, which is a little bit closer in contention. But still, after the first leg, you'd think Arsenal fancied going through with this one, taking Olympiacos at home.
Yeah, Olympiacos are very good at home. Like, English teams have a pretty poor record when they go to Olympiacos. Like, they turned over Man United in previous years in the Champions League and got great results over the years, but for Arsenal to go and win there was massive. Like, that's genuinely amazing. Come back with an away goal, and I think it'll be easier for Arsenal tonight. I think the way they're playing, there's a little bit of rotation. Like, Lacazette can start. I mean, he didn't start last weekend. Mm. And Nketiah and Martinelli. I mean, Martinelli's got about 8 or 9 in the Europa League this season so far, and he's been amazing. So he'll play. They've got options to change things and keep things fresh, and I just think they'll be too strong for Olympiacos. They've lost Pedense as well, Olympiacos, to Wolves in January as well, so that kind of hinders them a little bit. So I think it'll be fairly straightforward for Arsenal tonight.
Some interesting comments from Mikel Arteta ahead of the game in the press conference. He said, "We have three different routes to Europe. We have to try and maximise all three of them, and we go game by game." In other words, saying... they're going to go all out to try and win the Europa League. But more than that, it says a lot about the status of this competition, I think. The idea that it's not about winning a trophy. It's not about lifting the Europa League at the end of the run. It's about getting into the Champions League.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago when the Europa League didn't... When the winners didn't qualify for the Champions League, it was just a pointless competition, wasn't it?
It was just
completely pointless.
A Thursday disaster. Get out of it as much as you can.
All right, lads, we're going to send you to Kazakhstan on a Thursday, but if you win the entire thing, you're in it again next year. Oh, mint. Yeah, nice one. It's just,
I suppose that's the weird thing, isn't it? You don't get defending champions.
Yeah.
Which kind of doesn't.
Unless they drop out the Champions League the next year and they're like, it's us again.
Sevilla did that three years in a row, didn't they? Yeah, and they won it.
Under Emery, Unai Emery.
Speaking of weird statements pre-match, Manchester United versus Bruges tonight as well. Pretty of a disappointing 1-0 draw for United in Belgium, but Marley's still backing 1-0 draw against United in Belgium. Marley's still backing them to go through. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said pre-match, I think this is a weird one. He says, we're a big club. We've got good finances. The longer you're out, the more you suffer. Of course, it's an ambition for us to get back into the Champions League, both for footballing reasons and financial reasons that will help the club. Really weird thing for a manager to say ahead of a football game. Why is he even talking about the size of the club in kind of almost like a desperate way? We're a big club. And talking about the finances as well. It makes no sense. He just needs to shut up, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, before matches. Or just talk about the football.
It just seems to be a message coming from the top, doesn't it? That's what
it does, yeah.
It's a message coming from the top.
Go and say this.
Yeah,
we get, go and say everything's fine.
Go and tell everything the finances are all good, but we're starting to labour a little bit. Well, they clearly are, I think, based on the losses that have been announced. But I think that's an easy game for United tonight. I don't see Club Bruges bringing anything to that game. They had their chance in the first leg. He's a pretty weak United team, I thought, as well, that he put out. It wasn't his strongest first 11. So, if he's going to... I think it depends where all his focus is. If he's, is it the league or is it this? Because I think it's one or the other. The league's a real opportunity for him. I do think that.
The goal they conceded in the first leg to Bruges was just hilarious.
But they'll feel
that long ball up the pitch, and
they'll feel they can put out a slightly reserved team, and they've got no new injury worries. Pogba and Rashford are still out, but other than that, they've got a pretty clear bill of health. They'll know they can put a slightly reserved team out. They can rest players and should still get a result against Bruges.
Should. You never know.
Seen it happen before.
It's hard to predict what Man United are going to do this season. I've just said they're going to go quite far in this competition, but on the same hand, I wouldn't be that surprised if they went out and got a crap result and got knocked out. But that's Man United for you, isn't it?
There's a couple of interesting Manchester United-based stories in the newspapers today on the back pages. Even though January's only just finished, we're still talking about transfers for the summer. And The Express are reporting that Jesse Lingard and Andres Pereira will both be out the door at Manchester United this summer in order to finance a move for Jack Grealish. And also the Mirror are reporting that David De Gea is going to get sold, with Dean Henderson impressing at Sheffield United this season. He'll be brought back as the number one keeper again to raise transfer funds.
Oh yeah, the finances are perfect, Ollie. Yeah, you know what I mean? Sell your players to buy Jack Grealish.
It does make sense, because I think very few people would argue that Jesse Lingard and Andres Pereira are going to offer very much to Manchester United going forward in the future. Yep. David De Gea would appear to have his day and can still command a decent transfer fee. This is indications that they are willing to clear out that deadwood, that the rebuild is slowly happening at Manchester United.
Yeah.
Is De Gea deadwood, though? He's still one of the best keepers in the league. I know he's made more howlers than all the keepers. I think there was a stat, Sky said it, and he's great. I think he's made more howlers than anybody else in the league over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But that's because he's been in the league and been a regular keeper with an awful defence in front of him as well. But he spent years saving them, and now suddenly they just want to get rid for some bloke at Sheffield United who's having a worldie, granted, but he could also be relegated next season. So
I think the question is what Manchester United want to do, whether they want to, because De Gea is 29. His transfer value will start to drop over the next few years. They do have a replacement in Dean Henderson, which I very much doubt will want to play second fiddle to David De Gea at Manchester United. So do they want to promote him? Do they want to continue that development and cash in on De Gea while he still has a massive value?
I'd be looking. I look at De Gea now and just think, you're a £50 million check minimum as for a team that needs a rebuild. You've got a 50 million guy in goal, and you've got a guy for free who you've already got in Dean Henderson potentially coming back. That's just, Liverpool, we mentioned before, we talked about net spend because they sold Coutinho and then used that money on Van Dijk and whoever. Man United could just get 50 million in the bank and then go and sign another midfielder or another striker.
Another terrible player.
As long as they get the recruitment right, which is a big question. So you get rid of him, and then you get rid of Pogba as well, if that's what they're going to do. There's 100 million.
Pogba's
got to
go.
There's 150 million. Look what Liverpool did with 150 million. They got 130 for Coutinho, and look what they've done with it. Yeah. They've gone from top four regulars to piss in the league completely.
Does the Henderson thing, though, does that just basically say they're going against what modern day football is about now in the keepers attacking from the back? So I don't see Henderson as that player. I mean, I'm not saying De Gea is great at it, but he can pick a pass from his head. But is that what they're doing?
It's dependent on the coach, that though, isn't it? And I'm not sure Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a coach that coaches playing out from the back and that kind of distribution from goalkeepers.
They play the historic United way, don't they? Get the wingers.
two fast wingers.
Yeah,
and crossing
two fast
the
wingers,
box,
get the cross in the box.
Yeah. I think, just cut your losses. Especially as well, like going forward, there's going to be greater need for English players and the English quota coming in. So you've got Henderson's English.
Are these rumours coming because they're assuming that United won't be in the Champions League? So if United get to the Champions League, suddenly there's that influx of cash again, and all of a sudden they become some superpower again financially.
Maybe.
You know, I mean, they're only probably one Champions League season off being another.
But they still have the question of who makes the Manchester United squad, who is a Manchester United player, and whether they want Dean Henderson to be the future in goal, and whether Lingard and Pereira are players they want at the club, who have offered very little in the last couple of seasons.
I agree with the Pereira-Lingard thing, but whether that's to fund Jack Grealish. I've got a lot of time for Jack Grealish, to be fair. I think he's really good player. He's wasted at Villa.
If you're talking about Lingard and Pereira, that'll raise you about 10 grand.
So you're still about much money, will it?
You're still about 79,990,000 off.
They could swap out the two for Grealish, and Villa would probably take that. They get two attacking midfielders for the price of one, isn't it?
And Grealish could just play in place of both of them in the pitch and have more of an impact, probably. Yeah. Right, that is it for Football Social Daily. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow with Friday's show. And then don't forget, on Saturday, there'll be a full preview of all the weekend games. In other words, click subscribe and you'll get every podcast as soon as it's ready. Lee, Marley, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll see you
next time.
Football Social Daily with German gourmet doner kebabs made with our signature sauces.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.